You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. I know this is usually the least favorite day of the week, but life always feels a bit happier after a Rockets win, and that's especially the case after a Rockets playoff win, which happened on Sunday night in Game 1 of this first-round series between Houston and Utah. At the end of the day, though, it is only one of four wins that the Rockets are going to need to get to ultimately win this series. So, as we close the Game 1 chapter and turn the page towards Wednesday's Game 2, welcome in to a new episode here at Locked On Rockets. This is the only daily podcast focused on Houston Rockets basketball, and as always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. I work with Sports Talk 790, the Rockets' official radio flagship here in Houston. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Wyze. Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to wyze.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price on all of their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's wyze.com/locked. On today's show, on this Monday, April 15th, we're going to be spinning the discussion forward towards Wednesday's Game 2 and any potential adjustments to be made by either team. Neither the Rockets nor the Jazz practice on Monday, which, quite frankly, makes a lot of sense since there are two off days in between games. You might as well use one of those days off to rest and make sure everybody has their bodies right, particularly the older players such as, in Houston's case, Chris Paul. When we last spoke in our late Sunday night recap, I offered my immediate thoughts having just watched the 122-90 blowout from Toyota Center. Now, nearly 24 hours later, I've had a chance to rewatch the game, contextualize it a bit more, and also go through all the interesting post-game nuggets and quotes from both sides. So in today's show, on this Monday, I'm going to try and sort through what it all means as we get closer to Game 2, in which the Rockets will have an ideal opportunity to take a commanding 2-0 lead in this best-of-seven series. To help me do that, I'm going to be joined momentarily by my friend Matthew Cardenas. We've had him on as a guest in the past, but for anyone who doesn't know the name, he's a writer for Red Nation Hoops. He's worked with ABC 13 here in Houston covering sports, and he also hosts the Matt Cardenas NBA show, which you can find on the Lineups channel on YouTube. Anyway, without further delay, let's head straight to the phone lines and get Matt connected right here at Locked On Rockets as we look ahead to Wednesday's Game 2 between the Utah Jazz and your Houston Rockets. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, glad to have you back. And my first question for you, I thought you were a good get today because you've been doing great work on your Twitter feed at Matt_Cardenas, getting gift summaries of some of the main themes from last night, Rockets Jazz Game 1, and where things went wrong for Utah, and of course, right for the Rockets. And my first question for you about everything is about this rather unconventional strategy and the methods in which Utah is guarding James Harden. And to me, it looked like they tried the whole Milwaukee strategy of forcing him right as much as possible, and then even trailing him at times to prevent the step back threes and funnel him as much as they could toward Rudy Gobert in the paint. What ended up happening, though, beyond just Harden putting up 29 points and 10 assists, is that it left the Jazz defense in such a scrambled and compromised state that the Rockets ended up getting tons of wide open threes, and even though they started cold, sample size went out, and eventually they made 15 of them, shooting nearly 37%. And the most surprising aspect to me, Matt, was that after the game, Ricky Rubio, and that's a guy who defended Harden for extended stretches, stood by the strategy as something they'd continue to do. He basically claimed success by saying they limited Harden to just 29 points on 26 shots, and superficially, I see where he's coming from. That does seem fairly good in the context of Harden being the MVP of the league. But there are a couple of extenuating circumstances. First, the Jazz, they're a little lucky that the officials let a lot of contact go. If they had been more by the book, Harden probably gets closer to 9 free throws instead of 3, and perhaps he finishes with 35 points on 23 shots, and we're having a very different discussion. But more importantly, even if Harden isn't as efficient as a scorer, that defensive strategy, it's not really a successful result for the team if Houston's shooters are getting that many wide open looks and Harden has double-figure assists. So I know on Twitter you've been breaking down the film today on a lot of those possessions. Generally speaking, what did you see?
Well, first off, what I've kind of noticed is, so the strategy that Milwaukee's been trying to, that is trying to implement across the league is labeled the blueprint to guard James Harden is you trail behind him when he's coming off the screen, or just stay behind him in general, and you want him to go right. But the thing is, a lot of teams don't have necessarily the length or the skill of certain defensive players like Milwaukee does, because teams would much rather have Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe guarding James Harden rather than a Ricky Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Jay Crowder, players of that nature. It was exactly like you said. Harden had a wide open lane every single time. And I'm not even talking that he just stops right there around the free throw line. He's going all the way to the hole. And almost every time he had a floater. And if let's be honest, Harden's floaters fell in the first couple minutes of the game and kind of fell off in the second half. If this maybe three more of those floaters fall, Harden's going to have a lot more points last night than he did. You know, I do understand the fact that Ricky Rubio was right. You know, you held Harden to 29 points on 26 shots. That's good. Great. You know, he wasn't as efficient or anything, but like you said, the corner threes were open the entire night. Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker shot 6 of 12 combined from three. Daniel House was able to penetrate quite a few times. I'm pretty sure you remember that monster dunk he had when he was wide open and just beat his defender at the time. As long as Utah keeps implementing that strategy, you actually kind of saw it a little bit with Chris Paul too, but I think with Chris Paul, they were a little more okay with him taking the mid-range jumpers. But also in the fourth quarter, Chris Paul kind of took over for Houston in the fourth quarter and really got that run going. He kind of ignited all of it. I think at one point, Salman Ali pointed out he had scored or assisted on Houston's 12 of their first 16 points in the fourth quarter. So as long as they keep doing that, it's going to be a nightmare for Utah. Granted that Ricky Rubio isn't the greatest of defenders. He's decent, but when you put him up against a player like James Harden, it's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, and as far as Chris Paul, I actually think in the grand scheme beyond just this series, that was probably the most encouraging thing of everything we saw from the Rockets last night, that he still has that extra gear, and especially if he's rested and there's extra time off in between playoff games, especially early in series, then he seems to still have that quick twitch, the ability to start and stop on a dime that throughout the year, a lot of us wondered if a 33-year-old Chris Paul still had. He looked really, really good last night. As far as the Harden strategy in particular, and I'll give Ricky Rubio the benefit of the doubt, because sometimes I think these post-game quotes, the players have not had time to do anything. All they've had time to do before they get a microphone or recorder shoved in their face is take a shower, and then they view for 60 seconds the box score. That's all they do. And you see 29 points, 26 shots, and it's the MVP of the league. Yeah, at first glance, you can live with that. My guess is that today, when they look at the film, and of course, it's especially the case with Quinn Snyder, they're going to realize just how poor the strategy was. And Matt, I'm just curious what you think the adjustment is for game two. To some degree, it is a pick your poison because, well, if you close off on the corners, perhaps you can force them to take some shots in the wings rather than the corners, but you're still going to have open threes unless you let James Harden have the floaters, because if Rudy Gobert doesn't step up as much as he did last night, then you're going to have even more lobs to Clint Capella. So to some extent, there's a reason the Rockets are a historically elite offense. It is pick your poison, and the Jazz don't have the overall length athleticism that Milwaukee does. My suspicion is that you're going to see them at least make Harden hit a few of those mid-range shots. What kind of shocked me was that other than the first quarter of the game, it wasn't even like Harden made that many of those shots, yet they still hedged off of everyone else to that extent. So there's no easy solution to me. It's just, as I see it, you almost have to invite Harden rather than give up those open threes, at least force him to make a few and get hot. And then at that point, if it's an on night for Harden, perhaps you're cooked or there's nothing you can do. But that to me seems like, I guess, the only real adjustment that makes sense. Where are you at as far as if you're Quinn Snyder, what are you thinking of doing in game two?
Right. Well, you made a really good point as to the point that these players, they've barely taken a shower. They haven't even been able to fully take a playoff loss yet. You know, a lot of those quotes could be taken a little bit out of context. They could just be in the heat of the moment. Quinn Snyder is a hell of a coach. He's going to make the right adjustments that need to be made. More importantly, like I said in the, like, about 2 days before the series started, Rudy Gobert is a great rim protector. Granted, last night when he was on the floor, the Rockets shot almost 63% of the paint. But what I think Utah is going to want to do more is, like you said, invite him to shoot those mid-range jumpers a little more. To some degree, it's kind of like the model that Popovich had against Harden 2 years ago in that one series against the Spurs when it was Spurs Rockets, right when Kawhi was still there. Yep. And you know, when they're gonna let him take the mid-range shots more. They're not gonna welcome the lob as much. They'll live more with Harden killing you in the mid-range game. And more importantly, I kind of noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, I felt like a lot of Utah's rotations were just slow. I felt they were a little late every single time, which could have been part of the reason that PJ Tucker had so many wide open threes. Daniel House, Eric Gordon had a lot of wide open threes. So I think they're going to tighten up the rotations a little bit, and I think they're just going to get to the weak side and the help side a lot quicker. I lost track of how many open threes the Rockets had last night in the corner. So if I'm Clint Snyder, my main point is, like you said, just invite Harden to shoot the mid-range game more. And granted, Harden doesn't shoot a lot of them, but it was his strong suit before Mike D'Antoni came to Houston. Whenever he had Kevin McHale, Harden loved the mid-range game because he still had the step back. It was more in the mid-range game. Now it's obviously advanced to the three-point line. So you know it's still in his arsenal. And to be honest, I do think they would live a little more with Harden taking those mid-range shots rather than Chris Paul.
True. I think that's a good point. And then as far as the rotations, I think it's less about effort. I think it's more about placement. I do think you're going to have to give up some threes no matter what, but you could make a more concerted effort to close off on the corners and then push them towards the wing or above the break, those types, which are at least percentage-wise a little bit less efficient. It may not make a huge difference, but yeah, to me, I'm with you. That's the obvious adjustment, and it still may not be enough. The thing about the Rockets and the Jazz, they played so much the last two seasons. We've been through this so many times. There are only so many ways that the Jazz, with a similar supporting cast, can defend the Rockets, and they've tried a lot of them. So some of it, I know it's easy to criticize in game one, they lose by 32. Well, some of it, quite frankly, the Jazz have tried these other strategies and they have not worked that well. So now they're trying something different, and you know, we shouldn't be criticizing Quinn Snyder for trying. So they'll certainly do something different in game two. What it is, we'll see in 2 days. We'll get back into the show momentarily by shifting our focus to what went right for the Rockets on the other side of the court, that's defense. But for now, I want to pause and tell you guys a little bit about our friends over at Wise, the sponsor responsible for bringing you today's show here at Locked On Rockets. And Wise, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Their mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone, which they do since their camera footage can be accessed from anywhere via your mobile phone. Wise is packaged with premium features, allowing users to see everything they need for only $20. There's no subscription required, it works with Alexa, and there's free rolling 14-day cloud storage. So how does it work? The camera runs 1080p in full HD, which means the images are so clear you won't miss a thing. You can connect with life as it unfolds, all in sharp focus. It even comes with night vision and two-way audio. As far as potential applications or use, you can check on your home anytime with the Wise Apps live stream, which comes with an 8x digital zoom. If you're worried about kids or pets, you can watch them. You can even keep tabs on contractors and their work through the time-lapse feature. And if you want more, they've got that too. Because for just $10 extra, the Wise Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds and automatically detects, tags, and tracks motion within its field of view. After all, since life moves fast, your camera should too. To check out all the products, just go to wise.com/locked, that's WYZE.com/locked, to get the guaranteed lowest price. All right, now continuing our show on this Monday, April 15th, I'm Ben Dubose, correspondent with Sports Talk 790, regular host of Locked On Rockets. Today's show, I'm joined by Matt Cardenas, host of the Matt Cardenas Show on YouTube and the Lineups channel there, also writes for Red Nation Hoops. He's worked with ABC 13 here in Houston, and we're picking his brain about the X's and O's of what went right for the Rockets, both on offense, which we did in segment one, and now transitioning to defense here in segment two. You can follow Matt on his Twitter page, @Matt_Cardenas, where he's had a lot of really quality gifts today summarizing what went right for Houston and, conversely, what went wrong for Utah. Matt, as we transition to the Utah side of the fence, I want to ask you about the two guys that the Rockets really limited, which were Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles. Ingles had just 3 points. Mitchell had 19, was very inefficient, 7 of 18 from the field. Actually, let's start with Mitchell, because while I think we give a lot of credit to Austin Rivers, Daniel House, and they deserve it at times, each of those guys did pick up Mitchell during their periods off the bench, we shouldn't forget about the guy who started and played the majority of the game on Mitchell, and that's Eric Gordon. And going into this series, a lot of folks were skeptical, given Eric Gordon's relatively small size as a starting three, but I thought he played Mitchell really well in this game. There was an early possession in which he was so physical, he actually forced Donovan out of bounds, his back heel, and I thought that really set the tone. And you did a great job on your Twitter page, again, at @Matt_Cardenas, of showing what Eric did right. If you could just explain, when you watched the film today, what you saw of Eric Gordon against Donovan Mitchell and why, even though during the season, I don't think Gordon profiles as an especially good defender, sometimes in the playoffs he can be. And I think it probably starts with his lower body strength and his ability to body guys like Donovan Mitchell, does it not?
Right. Well, first, it's my Twitter account is @Matt_Cardenas. I know that's kind of a little hard to read, but like, yeah, it's two underscores. A lot of people think it's just one, but just want to throw that in really quick. But I think with Eric Gordon, like you said, Eric Gordon, I think his strength kind of catches opposing guards off guard to some degree. What Gordon really did well last night was he stayed on Mitchell the entire time without fouling. And that's what's most important. Can you stay on the guard and can you make it complicated for him without fouling? And that's exactly what Eric Gordon did. Donovan Mitchell had 5 turnovers in game 1, and 3 of them came when he was being guarded by Eric Gordon. There were times where Gordon would be guarding Mitchell to the point where Mitchell would get in the air and he would have no idea where to go. And I think some of that credit also needs to go to Clint Capella.
Yeah.
Because Capella did a really good job of, while he would be dropping to account for the lob that could be going to Gobert, he stayed around Mitchell just enough to alter his shot. And you could kind of tell that his length was bothering Mitchell the entire night. But Gordon consistently fought over the screens. He made sure that Donovan Mitchell never had a breath of fresh air. I don't think Mitchell had 5 clean looks on the night. And it's kind of looking at the point where you might want to make Eric Gordon the primary defender on him the entire series.
The other guy I wanted to look into was Joe Ingles, because to me, he is the variable in that he shows how committed your defense is. Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter, he still to this day blasts the Thunder that 4-2 loss in the first round a year ago because they botched some of the most simple off-ball assignments on Ingles. And in the one game that Houston lost, and it was actually a home game too, in that best-of-7 series against the Jazz a year ago, Ingles went for 27, and largely what happened, the Rockets, their attention to detail away from the ball, and that includes James Harden, was not there. So to me, it's not a shot at Ingles, but just the way he plays, obviously his ability to shoot, but also how well he understands floor spacing. Generally, he takes advantage of you if you are undisciplined, if you are not focused. To me, the health, the way they defended Ingles, I don't think the Jazz have a counter to that, do they? It's just they take advantage of you not really paying attention. And if you defend him with the level of off-ball attention that the Rockets did on Sunday, then he's probably not going to be a key difference maker. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's 100% fair. And I think what the Rockets did a really good job of is you only got him to shoot 4 shots. Joe Ingles didn't score until about 9 minutes left in the third quarter. And what I noticed is anytime Ingles got the ball, the closeout was really strong. There was an immediate contest right there, even if Ingles thought about shooting. You know, Joe Ingles, I think you honestly kind of have to game plan for him. Outside of Donovan Mitchell, you kind of have to game plan for him the most because, you know, like you said in the OKC series with Utah, it's you have to stop Joe Ingles. And Oklahoma City didn't do a good job of that at all. Houston didn't do a good job of it in game 2 last year. I guarantee you, D'Antoni, Jeff Vizdelic had Joe Ingles very high on the game plan of players that need to be defended well. Because like you said, if you are undisciplined, he's going to take advantage of it because Ingles is not a very athletic player. He's not a very quick player, but he's a smart player. And he's going to take advantage of that every single time. He will move off the ball. Granted, he did have a few times last night where he created for others. I think with Ingles, that's something you live with. As long as you're preventing him from shooting the 3 ball at a high level, you're doing a great job of defending Joe Ingles. And if you can contain Joe Ingles and kind of make everything run through Donovan Mitchell, this series isn't going to last that long because the problem with Utah has always been the lack of a second creator and the need to rely so much heavily on Mitchell from an offensive standpoint that he gets gassed, he gets tired. And granted, he's still a young player, so he's still trying to figure out certain nicks of the game, certain kinks of the game. So with Ingles, you have to stay attached to him the entire time, make sure as soon as you get the ball, you have a hand in his face. And more importantly, you're going to want to make him put the ball on the floor.
One of my pet theories, I want to run this by you, looking at the end of the rotation options for the Rockets, and technically Mike D'Antoni did play 10 guys on Sunday in game one, but a lot of it had to do with Shumpert just playing minutes in the fourth quarter when the game was largely decided and they wanted to keep him sharp. Generally speaking, the last two spots went to Gerald Green and Kenneth Faried over Shumpert and Nene. And Faried played very well, Green not so much. But my theory on that, some people look at it as far as who's earned those spots. To me, it's less about one of those players being better than his competitor, and it's more about what the Rockets feel they need. And to me, to see Green over Shumpert two straight games, Oklahoma City and Utah, and then Faried over Nene against the Jazz, sure, Faried helps a little bit with defense only because he rebounds better than Nene, and so there's a trickle-down effect. But generally speaking, Shumpert and Nene are much more stable players defensively than Green and Faried are. And yet the Rockets went with those anyway. And some will say they're going offense. Well, they are, but what I think the real tell is that Mike D'Antoni trusts his defense so much that he's willing to gamble on the side of offense. In the case of Faried, more hustle, more vertical spacing. With Green, we saw what he did against in Oklahoma City, put up five threes. He can make shots even against tough defenses. So to me, and maybe it's just the Utah matchup, it could shift when you play a better offense in Golden State, assuming the Rockets advance. But it feels like to me, and this is what I want to get your take on, that maybe Mike D'Antoni, the decision who he plays, it's what side of the ball does he trust more. And maybe it's how they're playing, but it's also probably a combination of playing Utah. But to me, it feels like the Rockets have so much trust in their defense right now that that's why they're willing to actually gamble on the side of offense in Gerald Green and Kenneth Faried. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that 100%. And like you said, it's really is about trusting your defense more. The Rockets have been one of the better defensive teams since the All-Star break. And what kind of happens is, you know, sometimes it's honestly just a thing about matchups. And are you going to trust your players a little more? You know, Nene is a bigger body, and he would make it a little tougher on Rudy Gobert around the rim. But like you said, Kenneth Faried can move way quicker, and he's much more athletic. And even on the offensive end, he connected with him and Chris Paul have great chemistry in the pick and roll. They are almost automatic every single time there. Honestly, though, with Gerald Green and Iman Shumpert, I am a little surprised that Green is getting more playing time right now, because while Gerald Green is a better, better offensive player, I just think he can get hotter quicker. A lot of his shots are contested. A lot of his shots are, you know, one pass to him in the possession and he's going to jack it up. A lot of the times they're barely contested, barely any room to move. And I think Iman Shumpert is kind of the safer option in terms of he just makes a few smarter plays. And on the defensive end, he is much more sound. Iman Shumpert has been one of the better perimeter defenders in the league since he came in, going back to his days with Cleveland when he was part of that team that won, that came back from 3-1 down. It really does make a lot of sense what you say, because as long as the players are going to make an effort on the defensive end, they're already an upgrade on the offensive end, which is kind of pick your poison. You know, it's just kind of which one do you want more of? And D'Antoni said, F it, I'm going to trust my guys, and if they're going to play well on the defensive end, I already expect them to do well on the offensive end. So with that, I think it's just trying to put games away a little faster and trying to get maybe a little more rest for players like Chris Paul, because Kenneth Faried is just so athletic and Gerald Green can get hot. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if when we're on the road in Utah that you have a big night from Gerald Green.
Yep. He seems to have strong nights on the road. I've noticed that as well. And we should also give him credit. Even though he's certainly not a big rebounder, he's actually kind of useful. The Rockets' gang rebounding approach, and that's how they actually out-rebounded Utah by one last night, despite the size deficiency. Talk about Faried being springy. Well, so is Gerald. He had a couple of nice back taps to keep possessions alive. Folks, remember to get this show every day. You can subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, now as we finish up our show on this Monday, April 15th, with Matt Cardenas, you can follow him on Twitter at Matt_Cardenas. I got that right, didn't I?
Yep.
And of course, he writes for Red Nation Hoops. He's worked with ABC 13 here in Houston and a great Twitter follow breaking down the games. Here in our third segment, we spent segment one largely discussing the Rockets on the offensive end, segment two mostly what they did well on defense in the 122-90 blowout in game one, and of course what they need to do to continue winning in game two. Probably not to that standard. I think 32 points is rather lofty for anyone, but if the Rockets go up 2-0, it would be a pretty commanding lead. And I'll ask you just a very, as we close out the show, a very basic question. Who is game two more important for? Because in my assessment, it's kind of mixed in this case. Normally, I think you would say the pressure's on the home team, the favorite, which Houston clearly is. You don't want to give the road team life. And a year ago, that's what they did. Now, the Rockets did rally to win in 5 games, but they lost game two at home. And ultimately, it was a best of 5 series with 3 in Utah going back to game 3. So that's what Quinn Snyder and the Jazz positive experience that they will draw upon. And that's why they're not going to fold. They've been here and done that. They won game 2 a year ago. That said, my sense is that it's actually a bigger deal for Utah, because when you factor in the cumulative stress that Houston has put on this matchup and how bad it seemed for Utah, they lost in 5 games a year ago. And not only did they get blown out in this game one, it was actually worse than last year's game one. Last year's game one, the Rockets, they were up by 30 in the first half, but the final margin shrunk to like 14. And the Jazz, a lot of it came down to scheduling. They had a late game 6 against OKC on a Friday night. They had to travel to Houston for an early Sunday game. And there were just a lot of extenuating factors that made you say, hey, this game one, it's a schedule loss. They'll bounce back. This one, they were fully rested, and the Rockets actually got a lot better as the game moved along. And, of course, the Rockets were proven. They've now beaten the Jazz in the playoff series, which this time a year ago they have not. So what I'm getting to is that I know that technically if Houston goes up 2-0, all they've done is hold serve. But at some point, there's going to be a straw that breaks the camel's back. There's going to be a point in which Utah says, I don't know if we can do this. And to me, no matter where the games are played, if Utah goes into game 3, knowing that they have to beat Houston 4 times out of 5 games after everything that's happened the last 2 years in this matchup, that's going to be really difficult. So I'm not going to say it's not a big game for Houston. Clearly it is. We heard from James Harden after the game that they know what happened in game 2 a year ago, and they've got to come out focused and have the same attention to detail. Mentioned Joe Ingles and how they defend off the ball, not just on ball. All that stuff is relevant. That said, it's every bit as big, if not bigger, for Utah, because even if they haven't lost a home game, to me, from a confidence standpoint, they have to be at least a little bit rattled, especially if they lose 2 games in blowout fashion. Where are you at on that?
It's 100% a bigger game for Utah, simply due to the fact that I do think some of the players in the back of their minds might be thinking after that game plan on Harden, and even Ricky Rubio said that they're not planning to do much to the game plan of defending Harden. And when you look at it from that perspective, if that's not figured out, Harden's going to keep exploiting the Jazz's defenses and their defensive lapses, their defensive weaknesses, and the series is going to last very short. I think where the Rockets have the advantage here as well is, even though they lost game 2 last year in Houston, they've shown they can go on the road and win in such a rowdy crowd like Utah. They won game 3 and 4 in Utah last year, pretty handily in both games, actually. So Utah 100% has to be thinking, if they don't win game 2, the series is likely going to be over. I don't know if it'll be a sweep, but I guarantee it's not going to go more than 5 games. And we're going to have to bring the Warriors into this conversation, because there is a very good chance that the Golden State Warriors sweep the Clippers in their first-round series. If Houston can put the foot on the gas and get this series done as quickly as possible while Golden State is taking care of their business with the Clippers, more importantly, Houston gets a little extra rest for that series, because at this point, it's already been known if the Rockets advance, they're going to have to play Golden State in the second round, not the conference finals this year. You want your players as rested as possible for a gauntlet of a series that's going to happen. So try to finish the series as quick as you can, so then you can put all attention on Golden State. Because while Houston is clearly focused on Utah, it's clear attention is also going to be put on their potential second-round opponent in Golden State.
Bonus question for you. We'll call this a lightning round. Obviously, the Warriors are the priority for the reasons that you've said. However, if the Rockets are fortunate enough to ultimately play and defeat Golden State, there is still another Western Conference series to go. It's been a bit of a surprise in both of those. Oklahoma City and Portland and Denver and San Antonio, the Spurs, the Blazers, each underdogs, even though the Blazers are at home. Most people consider the sixth seed, the Thunder, the better team, especially with the Blazers missing Jusuf Nurkić. So as far as the other side of the bracket, there's a long way to go. But Matt, who do you think is in more trouble, the Nuggets or the Thunder?
Honestly, I want to say the Thunder, because even though Paul George said today that his shoulder is 100% fine, there were no signs. There's no way his shoulder is perfectly fine after playing less than 24 hours ago. I mean, he even said that whenever he shot a ball, that the Portland game, game one, was his first time shooting a ball since the Portland series. And I've kind of noticed it's not just one shoulder. Both of his shoulders seem to be bothering him. Yep. And if Paul George isn't healthy, Portland's going to win that series, so I would be much more worried about if I was Oklahoma City than I would Denver.
Yeah, I think Denver just had a cold shooting night, and they're fairly young and raw. They have been in kind of a weird spot because the last week of the year they kind of went into that tanking mode to try and leverage the matchups as best they could. I think there's an easy route to see them bounce back, and you can chalk game one up to just the Spurs' superior experience. Whereas, yeah, I agree, if Paul George isn't right, the Blazers have Damian Lillard, all of a sudden that can be tough with the Blazers having Lillard and home court advantage. Matt, I appreciate you so much for the time. Before you go, if you want, you can toss out your Twitter handle anywhere that people can follow you, read your work. Basically, use this to plug whatever it is that you want to plug.
Right. Well, yeah, like you said, I've done work with ABC 13. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt, M-A-T-T, underscore Cardenas, C-A-R-D-E-N-A-S. I look to try to break down the Rockets games as simple as I can for all my followers and make it a really enjoyable experience for them. And if you also want to subscribe to lineups, I do a lot of work on lineups as well. I have my own NBA show on there. I do that typically later in the week. So just if you want to subscribe to lineups, follow them, share with your friends, that'd be great.
Sounds good. Look forward to watching myself. Matt, thanks so much for the time. I look forward to having you back again sometime.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
Good stuff there with Matt Cardenas. He summed it up pretty well, I thought. Hit the nail on the head regarding a lot of points. And, of course, I defer to him because I know he's done some really good work all day with the X's and O's side of things. So I appreciate his insight, and definitely we'll have him back on in the future again right here at Locked On Rockets. For this Monday, April 15th, this is where we will leave things. If you want more content before our next show, which now that it's the playoffs, we're going to have shows every day, at least weekdays, and perhaps even more frequently than that, should circumstances warrant. Rockets and Jazz are back at practice tomorrow on Tuesday. We'll see if any news breaks there. But if you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And Matt is on there at Matt_Cardenas. And of course, Twitter is the home for real-time analysis. Beyond that, if you're not a Twitter person, you can also find the show online at Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, or you can go to the website, LockedOnRockets.com, or you can email LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Of course, you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, but you can also inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of the program, just as our friends at Wyze were today. Remember, Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to Wyze.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price on all of their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's WYZE.com/locked. And yes, our email address, again, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Great place to get in touch with me about a number of things, but especially advertising. We've got some great introductory specials. And of course, this is our biggest listening month or two of the year, considering the NBA playoffs. So if you want to get in on the action and take advantage of this network and the show, and thankfully it's rising popularity thanks to all of you great listeners, then yes, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know how I can help. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for listening. And please remember that in addition to listening, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car or you go to the gym, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and figure out and listen to our most recent episode that way as well. So with the plugs complete, this is where I will leave off. Thanks to Matt for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball.